Hello, friends, and welcome back to Like Anime, an anime show where we talk about anime. My name's George, and with me, as always, is Tony.
Anime.
Anime. Tacos.
Anime. Tacos. Anime tacos.
There's not a lot of representation of tacos in anime, I'll say.
That's true. If they did something in, like, Okinawa, it'd probably be like the taco salad thing.
Is that a thing?
I think that's popular in Okinawa.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not what we would call taco salad. It's not the same as the thing that we would order and expect to see when we order taco salad, but it's similar, I guess. Hmm. It's just a salad with taco meat on it, basically.
Right on.
It's pretty much a taco salad, I guess, right?
I'm full, but I'm ready for it.
All right. Well, I'll be right back. Let me go cook some up.
And while we're waiting on that, let's jump right in and talk about some anime. We got... What week is this, Tony?
I'm cooking tacos.
Oh, he's busy. Week 12. We're on week 12. This is crazy.
I knew you'd figure it out.
We are almost... I had to look at a paper and read some words.
I know. But it's right there at the top of the page where it always is.
I know, and I'm bad at it. I'm bad. I'm new to reading. That's why I watch anime and read subtitles. But... week 12, we're almost at the end. We're going to be ending a couple shows this episode.
A couple shows ending. Well, maybe just one this episode. Oh, no, two this episode.
We got two.
Yeah, you're right.
One of them's an ONA that's not a full-length series. But, everything else pretty much has one episode left. Some have two, and of course, some others are pouring over into next season.
Yep.
But I'm excited to wrap this up, and we're so close. But without further ado, let's talk about Super Cub.
Yeah, Super Cub, episode 11 of 12, titled She's Fallen and She Can't Get Up. No, that's not actually the title, but...
That's great. That should have been the title.
Would you like the she?
Yes.
She, but also she.
I love it. I didn't think of it.
I thought I was quite clever when I wrote that.
I wish I would have thought of it.
Yeah, so she's fallen and she can't get up, and so Kokoma has to go and save she.
And she does so. I don't really understand what happened because her injuries didn't seem to be that severe once she was out of the sort of ravine that she had fallen into. But maybe she was
so
stunned.
Cold.
Yeah, she was
so
cold. Yeah,
she couldn't get up.
Freezing.
She said, I don't know.
And she does have a small body, and she's younger. Seems younger than them. So Koguma goes to save her and she gets all wet in the process. And no, Koguma.
Oh, right.
Well, of course she is soaking wet. They both get wet.
Yeah.
And then I don't know, Koguma was like very helpful in all of this, but she was also kind of distant and kind of cold, I mean, she was literally cold, but just, in a distant way. Because, she gets her out of there, and then, she's like, are you going to call, an ambulance or, emergency services? And Koguma's like, no, I'm just going to take you back to my place. You'll have a bath. We'll get you some food. You'll be fine. And so that's what they proceed to do. And then she enlists.
How does she get her back to... How does Koguma get she back to her place on her cub?
Well, at first she's like, I can't carry you out of this ravine, so I'll just kind of help you, drag you out.
And you have to crawl out by yourself.
Yeah, and so they get out, and then she's like, oh, now I can carry you, and she plops her into the front basket of her cub, which was an offhanded joke in a previous, I think, last week's episode.
Right.
Where they're like, we'll go on a trip. We'll just put you in the,
in the front basket.
And she was, I think a bit humiliated by that, although there's no one around.
She's probably also freezing to death as Koguma drove back to her house.
Yes, because the basket, of course, being in front of the windshield.
Generally, that's where you put a basket, yes. Literally on the front where all of the wind is going to hit her. And she's soaking wet and already cold.
Yeah. Add an air current to that.
She probably would have died in reality. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or at least lost consciousness.
That's a good point. I mean, I disagree with Koguma. I think, of course, in an instance like this in real life, especially, like, you should absolutely call emergency services. Like, you shouldn't just...
She should have, as soon as... I mean, well, she should have called emergency services in the first place instead
I suppose.
Of calling Koguma.
Yeah.
But then once she called Koguma, Koguma should have called and said, hey, she's out here on this road or whatever, and then gone looking for her. And if you found her, then you could let emergency services know. But, you know.
I don't fault she too much because she was in a panic state and you know, was... immobile, but Koguma, and I don't know if this is supposed to, because I was thinking while watching it, like, she's kind of feels like she's on the spectrum a little bit of, like, you know, missing social cues, especially in the in this type of situation where it's like there are certain things that you should do, but she was very steadfast on, you know, doing it her way, and but anyway, she in this episode, you know, she managed to get her back, and then she called Reiko in the midst of that and had her go retrieve the bike.
Yes.
Alex Moulton bike, which I meant to look up because I'm like, I assume that's like a real bike, but I don't know.
Presumably, I don't know either, but I assume that it is.
Mm.
And so Reiko goes and fishes the bike out of the river / creek. I don't know what they call it a river, I think, but it wasn't that big.
Yeah. Yeah. It was.
I mean, it was winter, I guess, so maybe there's just not as much water flowing.
That could be. It's really cold and but she gets the bike and it's pretty much, I mean, it's still in one piece, but it's pretty bent up and
it's a little wrecked.
And then there's this whole scene where Reiko eventually shows up, but in the meantime Koguma gets all she's clothes off and washes them and they're hanging to dry and eventually and then she is very, you know, very Japanese, but, you know, very overly polite and feels bad that she's helping at all and wants to, you know, is just, you know, constantly feeling insecure about it. And Koguma doesn't really help. She doesn't really do anything to, like, you know, no, it's fine. Like, she doesn't really have, like, this maternal, like, you know, side to her.
You're being a silly little girl.
she's almost like, like a distant dad would be or something. Like, I'm going to help you and I'm going to, you know, do all the things that I think should be done, but I'm not going to really, you know, try to comfort you at all.
I mean, she runs a hot bath for her.
Oh, that's true.
When I say she, I mean Koguma. This is very confusing.
She runs a hot bath and then, which is nice. And she's very, you know, thankful for all this. And then when she gets out, Reiko's there at that point and wants to get in. And then there's a scene where, like, Koguma is, like, hanging up, she's clothes and has her underwear. And she gets really embarrassed again by that and takes them and, like, I'll do it. But yeah, I mean, that was, like, kind of the first half of the episode.
Yeah.
And then, well, yeah, there was a scene too where Koguma, actually, yes, this is worth mentioning. First time in the series, she cooks because all before we've seen her use her rice cooker. We've seen her use these, like, bags that you just microwave or, you know, or a lot of cases she would just eat them room temperature.
At school,
At school. But we hadn't seen a lot of her at home, like, cooking a meal, and she had, you know, it was an emergency, but she had guests over, and she made udon or ramen or something, some sort of noodle.
It's curry udon, right?
Was it udon? Okay. I was pretty sure.
It was definitely udon, and I think it was curry udon.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then while they're sitting down...
That's what you were supposed to make for dinner tonight, but you didn't get that memo.
I mean, I got it, but there wasn't enough time or motivation. But fair enough. I'll put it up on my list.
Yeah. The problem is we haven't been able to find gluten-free udon noodles, which we would need to do.
Yeah. We do have some ramen, gluten-free ramen.
Right,
yeah.
Which is why I sent you the gluten-free ramen thing from, or not gluten-free, but the ramen curry from Midnight Diner Tokyo Stories.
He didn't send me a recipe. It was just a link to an episode that didn't play. Or, you know. Just info on an episode.
Oh. Well, you probably could have played it on Netflix.
Oh, is it on Netflix?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I looked it up on Just Watch, but nothing came up. So I was
really?
I was like, all right. And I searched YouTube as well, but still nothing came up.
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
Oh, well, I didn't know that.
Anyway.
But anyway, there was a scene that I'm trying to get to where you know, Koguma serves this meal, and then Reiko gets up and looks in the fridge, and she finds some hard-boiled eggs that Koguma had made. And she grabs three, and it's for each of them to have in their curry.
Mm-hmm.
And Koguma does not like this at all. Like she has the vibe of "Don't touch my eggs." Like, what is wrong with you? And Reiko's just like, "What? Chill out. Here's yours. Like, shut up." But that was a cute moment that I liked. But yeah, and then...
But then she gave Koguma an egg for her curry udon as well, and Koguma was like, all right, and ate it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Somewhat aggressively ate it, but, you know.
Yeah, she was... she begrudgingly ate it, I think, but... So I guess that's supposed to show that she, even though she has like this caring side, even though it's not very maternal, she still has a line of like, you know, this is my, I live alone, this is my stuff, and you're touching my eggs.
Don't touch my stuff.
Don't touch my eggs.
Don't touch my stuff.
I'm feeding you udon curry, but.
It's bad enough you're in my house. Now you're going to go touching my stuff. Actually, the whole thing about, the refrigerator thing, like, If you ever do go to Japan and you end up in someone's house, don't just go and open their fridge to find something for yourself. Mm. You should always ask them, because going into someone's fridge is like big no-no faux pas. Unless they, you know, give you permission or something.
Of course.
You should ask. But...
And honestly, like, I totally... I
mean, you shouldn't even ask, actually, but, you know.
I didn't know that specifically about Japanese culture, but I think in general, like, in American culture, like, that's also a thing. Like, unless you, you know... If it's your first or second time, like, you know, visiting someone's house, you don't generally like raid their fridge, right? Like,
I mean, that's considered true, rude. But it's, I think it's more extreme in Japan.
Yeah.
Because I mean, normally,
I can believe that.
I don't know. I'm just imagining a situation going over to like a friend's house and, you know, saying, hey, have you got any beer? And they're like, yeah, it's in the fridge. I don't think that would happen in Japan very much.
It probably not.
The person
yeah.
would go and get the beer for you yeah. out of their fridge and, you know.
And that checks out to me because there's a, intense like element of politeness, you know, in Japan. So that it kind of ties along with that. But yeah, so but Reiko like knows Koguma well enough to raid her fridge, I think. But she
maybe not by Japanese standards.
Maybe not. But anyway, we move on from there. So, this is another interesting thing where, like, they never contact Shi's parents during this whole night. They just go over the next day and are like, and explain everything. And the parents don't really care.
Did they not? I think, for some reason, I thought Reiko.
She was in charge of that or something.
Talk to them or something, or I don't remember exactly.
I don't remember it explicitly stated. Maybe I missed it. And like,
didn't she take the bike over there, though?
No, she took the bike back to Koguma's. Yeah, because there's that whole scene where they, like, you know, while they're eating, they kind of abruptly tell her about the bike and break it to her. I don't know, unless I missed something. I just thought that was kind of odd. But
it might have just been like a little tiny thing, but I thought it was mentioned that it was that Reiko had called them or something and told them that... she was going to be staying over at Koguma's or something. I don't remember.
Maybe. Yeah, I could have missed that. But regardless, so the next day they, you know, they all go back over there and explain the situation and the parents are very thankful and they give them this pass to have free coffee for a year. And then they add on sandwiches.
Yeah. And this is where I have my next note.
Oh, sweet.
Is, Shi's parents give Koguma and Reiko 1 year of free coffee and sandwiches at Buh. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's French. My question is, how does Reiko's contribution even come close to equaling Koguma's contribution here? Like, she went and she fished a bike out and then, you know, showed up and took a hot bath. And Koguma,
stole some eggs.
Koguma literally saved their daughter's life, right? I mean, she probably could have done a better job of it, but, you know, she did. She managed to accomplish the life-saving thing that she set out to do.
It's like the opposite of guilty by association, you know, it's like, you know, goodwill by association, like,
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, because they're all tight friends, so I mean, it's not like they're strangers and like, you know, so it's like they come there all the time anyway. So
that's
like,
true, that's true.
It's like, you know what, we like you, you know, you're part of our family now, you know, or, you know, or we've just got closer. I hear you, like, she, on paper, she did not really contribute that much.
Yeah.
But she was there and she helped. So I don't know.
Minimally.
It seemed rude to be like, all right, Koguma gets this, but I don't know about that other one.
I mean, they should have just given it to Koguma.
Yeah.
You know?
That's fair.
I don't know. Maybe they give Reiko something else. I don't know.
And we actually watched this episode together and I was like, and we didn't talk too much about it, saving for the podcast, but I did comment, like, you know, Like, you know, if one of us had that, would you eat anywhere else for a year? Like,
never.
Like, come on. Like, I'm going to take full advantage of this.
I'd go there in the morning for breakfast, and then I'd have them make me a lunch for me to take with me to school. And then after school, I'd come for a snack, and then I'd just hang out there until dinner time, and then I'd go home.
Yep.
That would be my life. My life would exist within that cafe from then on.
And they'd be like counting the days down to the years. Oh, yeah. But yeah, these girls are too
inviting friends over, like, hey, free sandwiches, come on.
Yeah, this is how what are the limitations on this, you know? So it was kind of fun.
I need you to cater a party for 1,000 people. I'd like all the coffee and sandwiches you can provide for 1,000 people, please. Is that
you just try to push it as far as covered, you can.
Is that covered by the 1 year
like, I'm just trying to put you out of business.
I saved your daughter's life. You're gonna say no to me?
Yeah. It's gonna cost you your business.
But fortunately for them, Koguma and to a lesser extent, Reiko aren't those type of people.
Yeah.
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 All right. Go ahead and say what you're going to say.
Yeah. I'm just trying to round out this because that's most of it. But then there's a part where Koguma has a realization that she remembers before Koguma even got a Super Cub. Oh, yeah. We're talking first episode. She was like biking up a hill and they, a scene that I had forgotten, but they show it. You show this scene where she passes her on a bike and is just all like just happy and full of, you know, life, seemingly.
Yeah. There's like a whole bunch of people from her school are passing her while she's biking to school in the morning. Yeah.
But she remembered she stood out for some reason. And so it seemed like, or maybe it's just revealing it to us, but it seemed like Koguma also remembered her when they met, you know, for like the cultural festival and all that. But so it was, you know, interesting. Okay. And then I did like, at the end they have, you know, there's like, oh, the cherry blossoms are happening. We should all go. We have to travel to it. And like, she, you can go as well. And, initially they don't say that, but then they do. And they're all happy. And that's where this ended of like, we're going to the cherry blossoms. There's probably something else with that. But I liked it because I mentioned before with the ending, the animation to the ending theme has a lot of cherry blossom, like shows cherry blossom buds that haven't blossomed yet. And I had compared that to what I thought a lot of this first half of the show was building up to with Koguma and her social anxiety and her kind of, you know, her journey, her blossom, you know, socially. And so I like that this, you know, it's going to end with this trip to the cherry blossom. Seems, you know, very literal and figurative metaphor for Koguma. I don't know. I don't know how emotionally impactful it's going to end, but I like the sentiment at least.
Yeah, the next episode is titled Super Cub, so don't really know what it's about, I guess.
That's the name. That's the official name.
Yeah,
just Super Cub.
Yeah, that's the episode title is Super Cub. Yep.
Well, I mean, that could have been the name of every episode, to be honest, but...
I mean, it's the name of the show, so I guess, right?
Covers a lot of bases.
What was this one actually called? Because I made up my fake title, but I'm trying to think.
Yeah, I didn't write it down. But definitely the most dramatic.
Something about a short spring or something?
No, it was like a long, like, waiting for spring or something like that. Where it was like spring isn't coming
something
fast
about
enough.
Yeah. Don't remember.
And even like at one point, she was like pleading to Koguma, like, can't you make this winter go away? And she's like, I don't do that.
Not my job.
So, that's all I got. All
right. So yeah, that does it for Super Cub. And next up is So I'm a Spider, So What? Kumo desu ga nani ka? Episode 23. So I forget the title of this episode, but it wasn't called I'm Not In This One like the previous one that she wasn't in. But Kumiko is not in this one unless she is secretly. But we'll get to that. At the beginning, Ariel basically reveals that the Imperial Army was just being used as a distraction so that the demon army could attack the elf village and ultimately try and kill Potimas, the leader of the elves. Because, I don't know, reasons, I guess. It's kind of been explained a little bit that there's some bad blood between them, but not in any sort of detail, I guess. Anyway, and then so the big battle between Hugo and Shun gets over pretty quickly with Hugo losing because he sucks and Shun doesn't suck quite as much. And then so Sophia's there and she's like, all right, I guess I have to fight Shun now. And she's like, yeah, you can bring all your friends too. It's fine. Go ahead. Because she's got her magic canceling thing. So any magic they try and use isn't really going to do anything. So, you know, they all are like attacking her and she's not really having a problem with it. And then during the battle, she like knocks Shun down or something and... It's obvious that she probably could have killed him, but instead it seems like she's just sort of toying with him, trying to wear him out. And she sort of confirms that, she's not supposed to kill any reincarnations. Her master has told her not to kill any reincarnations. And since she's working for the demon army, we assume Demon Lord Ariel is the one that told her that. And not sure why at this point, other than we sort of know that in the past, there's been some interaction between Ariel and, I almost said Koguma, Kumoko. But the last we saw of that was Ariel basically killing Kumoko, as far as we could tell, but we know that that's probably not the case. Mm. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what to make of it, but I feel like Kumiko's influence on Demon Lord Ariel because of her body brain that is inside Demon Lord Ariel is affecting Demon Lord Ariel's judgment, and that's why Demon Lord Ariel.
Oh, okay.
How many times do I need to say this? I'll just say Ariel from now on, and that's why Ariel is maybe saying not to kill any of the reincarnations.
Okay. She's like influencing her, you know.
Yeah.
Thought process.
And this is, you know, 15 years from that happening, but,
okay.
But she's still influencing her somehow, so there's got to be something. There's something going on between those two, between Kumiko and Ariel, and just not exactly sure what yet. Anyway, and then so Wrath, the guy we saw a few episodes ago, who like showed up at the end of the episode, and it was a big dramatic reveal, but we had no idea who he was because we hadn't seen him before. Well, he shows up again and then says who he is. So at least now we know who he is. And he's working for the demon army too, I guess. And he's also a reincarnation.
Oh.
One that I think Sensei had said that he was dead or something, or I don't know. All of the reincarnations had assumed he was dead for some reason. I don't remember exactly. I don't pay enough attention to the human stuff, and that's all this episode is. So anyway, Wrath and Sophia, other reincarnations, are talking to Shun and the reincarnations that are with him and saying, you know, yeah, we work for the demon army, but the elves are the real problem in this world. Like, they're jerks. But they've basically, Shun and all his people have basically drank the Kool-Aid of the elves because Sensei has been sort of an influence on them, and she was born in this world as an elf. So she's bought into the whole elf thing, I guess. But yeah, we get a little more information about that when the elves teleport in a whole bunch of freaking mecha robot things with giant machine guns on them and stuff. Like, what? So that's a little concerning. Like, they're just, you know, bringing in their droid army like the Empire did in that movie. What was that movie called? Anyway.
Not important.
It's not anime.
It wishes.
So anyway, and then that pretty much ends the episode, and then we get post credits. We see Ariel and the Lady in White, as she's been referred to, which Shun has a grudge against her because he's been told that she's the one that killed his brother Julius. But I don't think we saw that, so we don't know if that actually happened or not. And my suspicion is that the Lady in White is maybe actually Kumiko.
Oh, okay.
In the 15 years
yeah.
in the future thing. So I don't know. I mean, that's just, I'm just making stuff up there. It's entirely possible that's not true, but that's my impression. Like, she was framed in a way like she's important, sort of like Wrath was, I guess. And it turns out he's just a dude named Wrath who's, you know, used to be, is a reincarnation as well. So I guess maybe it was important. I don't know. Anyway, that is that episode. No Kumiko unless you count the lady in white who might be Kumiko. So yeah, speaking of white, how's those Snow White notes?
All right.
You like, yes, my segue? That was a good segue.
That was very nice. You just talked about the penultimate episode of this season of Spider. But for those Snow White notes, this is the final episode. We have reached it. And even at the very end, at the end of the end credits, they show the end. Or they say, it says like final or something. It doesn't say like, see you next time or end of season. It says final. So I'm like, oh, I want more. And in the spirit of that, since it's finishing and since this was the last episode, I'll briefly talk about what happened. And then I will briefly, after that, talk about, you know, my thoughts.
And then I will briefly make fun of it.
Sure.
I don't know. We'll see.
See what happens. So last week, the cliffhanger was Setsu finally started performing, which was nice. You know, I was expecting them to wait for this final episode for him to start performing. But it ended, the cliffhanger last week was that he initially, because his mom kind of like got into his head and you know, kind of skewed, you know, what his real intentions. And I want to get into his relationship with his parents more, but he started playing like his grandpa, trying to channel that. And then during the course of that performance where the cliffhanger ends, he realizes that it's not like he's not pulling from a genuine place. And so like he's all these memories start flooding in of, you know, things he's experienced, you know, throughout this season. And he uses that as inspiration to, in the middle of his performance, kind of segue into his sound. And so the effect of that is this abrupt change musically. But then the effect it has on the crowd is pretty, on the, you know, the audience as a whole is pretty impactful. Like, by the time he finishes, and the performance itself was pretty great. Like, once he actually, like, was playing his sound, it was really entertaining. It was one of my favorite performances of this whole, like, competition with the group included. And so he ends it, and crowd goes nuts, and, you know, it's, like, went really well. And then after that, we get another performance from someone who's, like, not really, you know, not important, you know, just kind of a filler one. And someone even says, like, wow, like, you know, is everyone's still high off of, you know, what Setsu just did, and it isn't really, you know, this guy isn't breaking through that. And then after that, we get to the final performance, which this guy, what is this guy's name?
The final performance? So there's no one else. So there's no Mai Mai.
No Mai Mai, yes, okay. You're right. I was.
Thank you, I love watching. Hearing that. Can you say it again?
Tony was right. Everyone is shocked, but I wanted Mai Mai to perform, so there was some of that there. But you were right, ultimately, she only did the group. She was not, approved for the
individual. Yeah, I thought that's what had been said, but
yeah.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
And I wish she would have, but she was in the audience, and so you got to see some of her
reactions. And stuff, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, her brother is the final performer, Tanuma Soichi.
And Setsu's half brother or something, right? Or
yes, they are adopted.
Yeah, I don't remember
by his biological father, so I'm not sure what you would call that. Adopted,
half step, adopted. I don't know.
Yeah, it's confusing.
Not related. That's what I'd call it. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know.
Very loosely related.
I would say half, even though they aren't actually half blood, but being adopted, it counts as good as.
Yeah, they're being raised by. Although he was raised by his grandfather, so, you know, whatever. Anyway, so the whole expectation with this guy going is he's already a known figure. I mean, he's around Setsu's age, but he's already has notoriety. He's already won competitions. He's an up-and-comer. He's hot. And so everyone is expecting him to, you know, kill it, and he does. His actual performance, I didn't like as much as Setsu's second half of his performance. But it was interesting. Like, I don't know, like we talked earlier about, like, you know, the music compared to the reactions, and, you know, it's based on a manga. And so I imagine the music is being written from a perspective of how people are reacting to it, you know? So it's like, it's an interesting thing of, like, you know, backwards, engineering or reverse engineering. But anyway, so he goes, and it's, you know, it's good or whatever, but I didn't like it as much, and but everyone loves it. And then they announce the, I mean, I will say during Setsu's performance, while he's finishing, his mom, you know, makes a, is in the audience, and she makes a disapproving sound, like, psh, you know, or, ugh. And then after all the performances are done, there's a brief interim, and then they announce the, you know, who, you know, the rankings. And there's six performers, and Setsu ended up placing, everyone thought he was going to be first or second. They were assuming this Soichi guy was going to be first, and so Setsu would be second, but he actually got third.
But they actually ignored the normal numerology things and gave a zeroth place because he was so phenomenal. No, okay, so he got third?
He got third. Hmm. And I think based on the audience reaction, which was very favorable, and also the fact that he, it's the first time he's been, you know, as an individual performer is being graded, you know, so there's a lot of emotions going on after that's announced. But then it's announced, and the second place was like the kind of cocky guy that kind of called, you know, sets you out.
Oh, uh-huh.
He got second place. People are kind of surprised by that. And then first was, of course, the Soichi guy that people expected. And so this is where this episode did really good. And this season ended on a high note because of this scene and the subsequent aftermath of it. And so what happens is they call everyone after they announce the win, you know, the rankings, they announce, they have everyone come up on the stage and line up in order. And then, of course, like the top three placed right in the competition. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. they are each going to be awarded a trophy. And it turns, and so they start with the bronze, of course, third place, which Setsu was. And Setsu's mom, whose name is Umeko, she, because she is putting on this, you know, she doesn't have anything to do with the judging aspect of it, but she financially, you know, is throwing the competition, and or not throwing, maybe it's not the right word, but
sponsoring.
Yeah, sponsoring. There you go. And so she is the one that has the honor to you know, to hand out these trophies. And the trophies themselves aren't like metal. They're like they look really nice, and they're like engraved on like glass. It's like a almost like two-dimensional, like, kind of flame or diamond shape.
I've seen those kind of things before.
Those kind of trophies. And so he he's called forward and is going to meet her with the trophy. And as he is about to grab it, she clearly purposefully drops it. You know, so to make it look like, you know, it, you know, he, you know, I don't, like, he dropped it maybe, or, you know, and so it of course falls to the ground, smashes, and it's this whole dramatic scene. And then there's sort of a beat of just awkward silence, and then she leans in very close to him, to his ear, and says something to the effect of "You're pathetic and you have embarrassed me." And it was in that moment that it was a really impactful scene, actually, like the most impactful scene of this whole show, which hasn't given a lot of characterization to Setsu. But in this episode, actually did to me, and there's more with that. But it also gave me, like, because of course, like, we know that the town he's from and the people that are from that town are very into shamisen. But like, this actually, like, show versus tell, like, illustrated how important shamisen is. Like, it's more important than, you know, because any other mom, like, you know, this is the first time he's like professionally performing. Like, any other mom would be, you know, despite the performance he gave, would, you know, maybe not any other mom, but like a typical mom would be, you know, encouraging and uplifting, and so, you know, be so enamored or pleased to see their child, like, you know, do something like that and put themselves out there. But because he didn't, you know, perform to her liking, and didn't, you know, commit fully to his grandpa's sound, like she, I mean, she did expressly demand that. So he was kind of set up in a sense, but anyway, so that happens, and then they quickly cover it up of like the announcer or whatever is like, oh yeah, we're going to his smashed, that was an accident, but he'll get his shipped in the mail later, you know, and they kind of sweep that under the rug, literally, I guess. And then after this, Setsu's kind of walking downstairs, and he's by himself, and he runs into his dad, who is with, I don't understand their relation, but he's with the glasses guy. If you remember this guy, he's like a very accomplished shamisen player, and he had seen they had went to go see him in an early episode, all the main gang, to see him play.
Oh, yeah.
And they were really impressed by it. And then they went to see him backstage, and he had Setsu perform in front of him and all this. And so he was kind of like with his dad when they approached him, and he was like, congratulations on placing. You know, he started out pretty friendly. And then his dad's right there not saying a word. And Setsu is like, you know, you came all the way here to, you know, see if I could, you know, what I could do. And, you know, you're not going to say anything, like, and so he's kind of provoking him. And the dad says, like, I knew you wouldn't beat Soichi, you know, so I was right. And then he kind of gives him this, like, I don't know, like, flippant advice of, like, you know, you don't even have someone to train you properly. And, you know, I don't know, like, trying to a little hope there, but just kind of being standoffish and not really helpful. Where in, like, the previous episode, the dad had met with the mom, the ex-wife, presumably, and been like, I want to take Setsu and you know, have him under my wing. And they were kind of fighting over this, but instead of really offering an olive branch, he just is kind of distant and standoffish. But then after he walks away, the glasses guy, which I don't know if I wrote down his name. I don't think so. But, oh no, I did. Seiru. Yeah. Seiru. I don't know how to say that. It's hard.
S-E-I-R-Y-U?
Two U's at the end.
Oh, Seiru.
Seiru. He starts to, like, kind of, I mean, Setsu does not ask him to do this, but he just starts, he's like, oh, wow, you guys don't get along, and the dad walks away. And it's like, yeah, no shit. And then he starts to kind of give him an analysis, which is truthful, but then it kind of turns into, like, a pointed, like, burn, or just, you know, him being a dick to Setsu. But the initially, what he says is actually true. He's like, he kind of frames things in a more realistic perspective for him. It's like, even though the audience loved your performance, you know, from a judge's perspective, you switched halfway through. Like, you were not, you know, it's effectually a hard thing to judge because you completely changed, you know, your playing style, you know, halfway through the performance. Like, if you would have been, if you would have had a consistent thread, you know, and took them on that, you know, journey and actually committed to one or the other, like, he literally said, like, it doesn't even matter which one you would have, you know, committed to, you would have placed higher. And this is kind of hard to hear, but then he just keeps talking, and I forget exactly what he said, but just kind of belittling him, even though he had the air of, like, trying to be helpful and stuff. And that meanwhile, due to the, you know, the what happened on stage with the mom and the trophy, you know, the whole trophy thing, and then having the interaction with the dad, you, like, you know, you get a feel for the first time of, like, what, you know, his exact relationship with his parents. And knowing that his grandpa, like, mostly raised him and that he's gone, it's like he has no emotional structure or emotional, he doesn't have, you know, none of his family is cheering him on, aside from his brother, I suppose, but...
Support is the word you're looking for.
Yeah, support, yes. Words. So, yeah, he doesn't have the emotional support that he... you know, used to, at least, or at least should at this point, you know, because he's still not really an adult, you know, in the teenage phase. But anyway, so this all escalates in his head, and then this Seiru guy is not helping, and it's just making it worse and worse. And this all escalates to him, you know, finally breaking away from him, running out of the building. And meanwhile, his friends and stuff, and the girl that, you know, the little girl that lives beneath, you know, works beneath him, you know, his home, they're all kind of, you know, chasing after him, and he just runs out, and it's still daylight, you know, he runs out into the sort of foyer or whatever and into the grass, and, like, he just proceeds to have, like, a mental breakdown. Like, he just kind of loses it, but in his he's just, like, screaming but in his internal monologue, essentially, he's finally feeling the hunger for his art, you know, like, he's been throughout the whole season, he's been so, like, wishy-washy and, like, non-committal and, like, not sure of why he's doing what he's doing, you know, but all the while, like, thinking about what his sound actually is. And so this culminates in, like, his motivation and his perspective of why he wants to play and feeling that hunger for it. And that Seiru guy literally asks him, you know, like, do you even feel that hunger? You know, he's, like, questioning it in him and, like, prompting him to feel this. But it ends in, like, him... you know, in a very embarrassing way where everyone's kind of looking on in just like horror. And then there's also a scene where, I don't know if you remember the guy from the very first episode, because he meets this girl that he lives with shortly,
yeah.
And she has a boyfriend who has a lip piercing. And he shows up for some reason. He was at the competition, and then while Setsu's having his mental breakdown, his panic attack publicly, is kind of like standing there and sees him, and he's with a couple buddies, and he's like, you know, he's just like, oh my God, this, he says something like, which was interesting to me, like, a spoiled brat or something, you know, just someone, just an, which is interesting to me, like an onlooker doesn't know what's actually going on in his head and stuff, but it's just judging him for that. And his buddy's like, aren't you going to say something? Like, you know, we came all the way here. And he's like, no, forget it. And they just walk off. So it's like, damn, that was an interesting layer. But that's essentially the end. And to me, I'm sad if they're not going to make more, you know, adapt more of the manga, because I thought this set up nicely. Like, you know, it took a little too long to do it, but like it set up nicely, like his motivation to actually pursue his craft. But yeah, I it was a much needed character, some characterization and motivation, like with his parents and, you know, what he's struggling with. It almost seemed like from the start of the show, they were purposely not showing you a lot of his personality, like, and so much of it is wrapped up in the family dynamic. I wish they would have like dug into that sooner, you know, and kind of, and also I've complained about this before, but like the mom just being like, you know, having this quote unquote hot, you know, appearance and just being like, just she's a bit too much. If she was kind of like a more normal appearing mom who like wasn't a model, like I don't know about that whole aspect of her being a model and like kind of being like full of herself is kind of at odds of like her caring this much about shamisen and being so, you know, rigid and fundamental about like her children, you know, doing what she wants them to do. You know, if she would have been a little more stern, a little more strict, a little more like plain in a sense, but like it very, I don't know, it would have helped me, I think. But anyway, despite that, it was some nice characterization. It made me care more about Setsu. It's a thing that I had been a little concerned with. And it left me wanting more at the end, like not only from the perspective of it kind of ending on this emotional cliffhanger for Setsu, but it was a bit lacking, like I was talking about, like the way they structured it. They could have got to this a lot sooner. I think they stretched it out just to make this the first season of, you know, him coming to terms with, you know, why he's doing what the show is supposed to be about. So I don't know. Those are kind of my thoughts on it.
Maybe the next arc was too long for them to do, like, you know, half the season was this and then the second half was something else. I don't know.
Yeah, that could be where it was like not enough to squeeze into one run.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how popular it was. I don't know. I'm guessing if this gets a second season, it's not going to be for a while, and I'll probably be surprised if it does. But I did enjoy it nonetheless. I think I'll still have to give it like a 6, maybe a strong 6 overall. But this last episode was definitely a 7. And I wish the show as a whole could have like been that consistent.
Yeah, it was sort of up and down.
Yeah, for sure. And I agreed with a lot of your criticism of it, to a point. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those shows, like, I like, if it comes back, I will totally watch it and cover it again. But I'll be surprised if it does.
I probably won't.
Yeah, which is fair. Some of those shows, like I said, like, I'm giving it a 6. Even a strong 6 is like not a high recommendation. Like, that's not, you know, that's not enough, you know, to go out and run out and watch it unless you just love shamisen or you like music based shows. But
for those, I mean, anyone who's been listening all season probably knows this, but anyone who's, you know, just joining us this late in the season probably doesn't know that a 6 is what George considers average instead of a 5.
But, yeah, well, a 6 has something to keep me going. Like, to give something an overall of a 6, it's like, I don't feel like I wasted my time. Like, I feel like there was something here that I was pulling at.
Yeah.
And it ended well, and that was a good thing. Like, if it would have ended poorly, like, it might have went into a 5 territory, but it ended strong. And so, yeah, I mean, to me, a 5 is just middling, and, you know, not really even worth digging into.
Oh, all right. So, yeah, all right, fair enough. So this is better than a 5.
Yeah. Right. I stand by that. But yeah, we have seem to have by one digit seem to have slightly different rating. But anyway, that's what I got for that. So let's say we move on to Eden, in our ONAs and other category.
ONAs, shorts, and other stuff block. Yes, the first thing we have is Eden. This is also a final episode. And so in this episode, Sarah watches some more old videos of Dr. Fields. Dr. Fields being the person who designed the Eden project in the first place. Sarah being the girl who hatched from a capsule and was raised by robots.
Hmm.
Anyway, so the AI from Eden 1 tells Sarah that time has expired. And if she doesn't say the password in the next 8 hours, the chances of survival for the 35-ish thousand humans in cryosleep will fall to 3%. So, you know, that deadline that, you know, reaches zero, everyone dies. Well, now she's got another 8 hours, and then like 3% of them will still survive, apparently. Whatever. So the deadline wasn't really a deadline. So Zero, the bad robot... the leader of the bad robots, who is Dr. Fields' consciousness implanted into a robot.
Eden Zero.
No, not Eden Zero. Zero.
Oh, okay.
Zero the robot.
Zero of the show Eden.
Yeah.
Eden's Zero.
Yeah, but there's a place called Eden Zero. That's
okay.
Anyway. Zero activates this giant robot to destroy all the robots who sympathize with humans and who have been helping Sarah and stuff like that.
Okay.
And Sarah has the Eden 1 AI activate an older version of a robot that she had discovered at some point. And then she uses that to try and stop Zero. And then Sarah, like, they're battling and stuff, duking it out between the two giant robots, and then Sarah has the Eden 1 AI play some voice clips of Dr. Fields' dead wife and daughter that she, like, you know, plays at Zero, who is Dr. Fields' consciousness in a robot, right? And he realizes that he used to be human, so his hatred of humans is unfounded or something like that. I don't remember exactly. Anyway, so then he tells Sarah the password, which is the laws of robotics that we heard at the beginning of the show, which is similar to like the three laws of robotics we know, but it reads a little differently. Anyway, so then she says them, and humanity has saved the end.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's pretty much what happens in that episode.
Oh, there you go. I mean, the last episode.
Yep.
Well, that's. I'm glad they all were okay then.
Yep. It all worked out. What do you know? Yeah, this was, the concept was interesting enough, and it was fine. It was just barely above mediocre for most of it, to be honest. And it ended fine as well, like in that same range, just like, there's nothing really spectacular about it. Nothing super inspiring. Nothing super unexpected. So, you know, it's about what you probably would think it would be if you're expecting a fairly mediocre show.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to the next show in our ONAs and shorts and other stuff. We don't have any shorts, and we don't have any more ONAs.
We're wearing pants, though.
Well, you're wearing shorts.
Dang it. Now you've outed me. We do have shorts. Yes, there's a new animated show that has returned, a very highly anticipated, that is not in any way, shape, or form considered anime.
Yeah, I don't know about in any way, shape, or form. But...
is it like anime?
Yeah, it's like anime in that it's anime Shun.
An anime Ted.
An anime Pooh. No, I don't know. I'm just trying other things out. It didn't work. Yes, Rick and Morty has returned for season 5. If you're not aware, I don't know what kind of rock you're living under, but it must be a big one without television or people.
It's a sad rock.
A very sad rock.
But yeah, good show.
Yeah.
It's back.
Rick and Morty season 5. I really just wanted to kind of call it out and say, hey, if you, you know, weren't paying attention and didn't get the memo, episode 1 of season 5 is out. Apparently it's on YouTube, the whole episode on Adult Swim's YouTube channel.
Yeah, crazy enough.
Go there and watch it if you want to.
And I recommend it. It's good.
And I don't know that we really need to get into the story or anything like that, considering we're not going to be covering it.
Just wanted to shout it out.
Yeah, just wanted to say, you know, it exists.
This episode, yeah, we don't have to get too much into it. Like, it was for my money, very well written. I was comparing it to some shows we've been covering this season and just being like, damn, like they set up and resolved several things in this episode that that other shows would take a whole season to do and maybe even still fail to do. But yeah, it's great. It's like, there's so much. Like, watching it, I was like, I need to watch it again because there's so much in it that's jam-packed of stuff, little things.
Yeah, there's always lots of stuff. It's always well-written, you know.
Yeah.
If you don't like Rick and Morty, I'm sorry that we mentioned it. Sorry for reminding you that it exists, but you're in the minority, so, you know, get used to it. People are going to talk about it.
I steer clear of a lot of social media, a lot of Reddit stuff et al., but I know some people have been turned off to Rick and Morty based solely on the fan, you know, the cliche fan just response, and the fans tend to be annoying. I mean, there's that whole thing of, like, you know,
you're saying I'm annoying.
You got to be smart. No, I'm not saying you. I'm just saying, like, you got to be smart enough to enjoy Rick and Morty. And
yeah, I mean, there's that whole diatribe that was written, but I'm pretty sure that was written tongue in cheek or sarcastically.
Yeah,
to make fun of the perceived fans that
and those fans are out there, but there's, you know, they're just a vocal minority, as is the case with lots of things, politics.
If you're not into Rick and Morty, it's probably because you're not smart enough. So, you know, go crawl back under your rock, you slug piece of poo.
I don't let that stuff. Wow. I don't let that stuff get to me. But if it has rubbed you the wrong way, I implore you to try to put it aside, because it is a consistently very good show.
Yeah, yeah. If you've been turned off by all of that and you haven't even watched the show, or maybe you watched it knowing that you were going to hate it, you just try to stop hating it and then watch it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because there are people like that, that, like, they've just decided they're going to hate the show no matter what. So then they watch it and they're like, oh yeah, I hated it just like I thought I was going to.
Yeah. Well, I've been caught in this too, where it's like, if you're late to the party, and something reaches a threshold of popularity that is just, you know, astronomical, it kind of colors the perception of people who are uninitiated, you know, where it's like, you know, you start to, it's not fair, but, you know, your interpretation of it largely at that point becomes, you know, all these crazy fans online, you know, screaming about it and, you know, saying ridiculous things that, you know, they're just, you know, hyperbole, but it's a good show. That's it's nothing more than that. It's just a good show.
Yeah, it's a well-written show, and the humor is sometimes a little lowbrow, I guess. So I could see people that don't like it for that reason, I guess. But
yeah, but there's all kind. There's lowbrow. There's esoteric humor. There's really tongue-in-cheek humor. It's like they run the gamut, I think. Like,
yeah,
yeah, it's great.
But it's all really intelligent humor. So if you don't find it funny, it's because you're not smart enough.
That's right. Yes. Now that insulates us, you know. We don't have to hear your criticisms because you're just not smart enough.
Anyway, so that does it for our ONAs and shorts and other stuff block, which I think this is probably actually the last episode of it, because I have nothing to cover in next episode because Eden's done and we're not going to do Rick and Morty. We're not going to talk about Rick and Morty anymore. And yeah, I don't know. Unless I come up with something before next week, that's the final episode of that, because next season we're not doing that, I don't think. I don't know. I don't know what we're doing.
We probably will. I mean, there's always these ONAs that are popping up throughout the year.
Yeah, but I don't know that we need to block them all together.
Oh,
we
maybe can
just
not.
Have them, you know.
We're going to be making some changes to next season and probably each subsequent season just to make things better around here, make it more interesting.
Yes, no more pants.
Yep.
Change number one.
Just shorts.
No.
No. Just chonies. I hope. Well, that brings us to My Hero Academia. Are you still refraining from speaking during this segment?
No, I talked about it last week.
Oh, okay.
Remember? It has...
blocked it out.
It moved away from all the just people punching each other stuff.
That's true.
There's actual story here.
maybe for the sake of time, because I wrote down, I tried to succinctly just put a button on each thing that happened.
Yeah,
in
this is a filler episode, so we can glaze over it pretty quickly.
Okay. So do you mind? Can I run through my thing real quick, and then we can get into details if we want, like just to sum it up. We'll see if you think this does it.
All right. Well, I have three sentences.
Oh, okay. But I'll just try. So there's a city. There's an attack in Deka City. That's how this opens.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some PR training that our heroes
with Mount Lady.
Yeah, and
they learn
how to talk to reporters.
Mm-hmm.
And then their work study is resuming. We learn.
Later, but yeah.
Which ties into COVID, interestingly. It's like, oh.
We skipped over Christmas in the dorms.
Well, no, that's the final, the Xmas party. Because we learn.
It was the other way around. I don't know.
Well, we see the conference table of all the teachers.
Oh, right.
And
okay.
Audience we learn first, and then.
Yeah, you're right.
And then we end with the Xmas party, and they talk about what they're going to be doing.
Yeah. And Deku doesn't have a place to go for his internship now.
Yes, and neither does Bakugo, or he's Bakugo. Being a little weird about it.
And so Todoroki says, hey, why don't you come do an internship with my dad? So that'll be cool.
Yeah, and that was a post-credit scene, but that got me really pumped for the next. Like, I like that dynamic, and in the preview, which we try not to delve too much into, but it definitely showed a lot of, we're going to see Hawks, we're going to see, you know, they already set up some stuff with him, some like... You know, he's got a whole thing going.
He's a double agent.
Yes, yeah. Double agent. I kept thinking two timing, but those from what we did, what we're watching, that girlfriend show or whatever it was that we're not watching. But spoilers.
Spoilers.
Hey, a little intrigue there for stuff to come.
I mean, we might not be watching. I put a poll on Patreon today saying, hey, patrons, which of these shows... should we definitely watch?
And you only put shows that we're not watching on it.
I actually did like half and half of shows that we're both watching and shows that neither of us is watching.
Nice.
I didn't do any that just one of us is watching. So I put the ones that we're both watching already as sort of a distraction, you know, to nice. Any people who might look for the worst possible thing.
We have a total of two patrons, one of which has just recently gotten into anime, so we'll see what we get on that.
Wait, I thought last week we had three.
Well, we did. I think, yeah, you know, these things ebb and flow, you know? I mean,
yeah, I know. It's fine.
We respect all the, we appreciate all the encouragement we get, financial or not.
All right, well, let's move on to, I've been killing slimes for 300 years and accidentally maxed out my level, except the word accidentally is not in the English title for some reason, but I'm just throwing it in there because in Japanese... it's definitely accidentally.
All right.
All right. So this episode is titled, I Ate a Mushroom and Turned into a Child. Now, guess who ate a mushroom and turned into a child? It's not already a child. I'll give you that hint.
Our main character?
Yeah. What's her name? Do you not remember? There's like two names you could say. I'm just like stretching this out because I don't have much to say about this episode.
Yeah. I don't remember.
As soon as I say it, you'll remember it.
I'm sure.
Azusa.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Witch of the Highlands.
Oh, the Witch of the Highlands.
Yes,
yeah.
Both of those are names that you can get. So yeah, our fan service elf is preparing some fried mushrooms for everyone. She went out into the forest and harvested mushrooms. And she says, all the mushrooms that I picked in the forest are fine to eat. And then... after Azusa eats one, she starts talking about how, oh yeah, I also found these mushrooms growing in my bedroom that I, you know, threw in there as well. Oh, I think that was one of them. Oh yeah, those are called the gnome something mushroom. They make you turn small.
Oh.
So Azusa turns into a child.
Chibi.
And then she has to go on this adventure to get a cure, which it turns out is... remember a couple episodes ago where there was the imposter Witch of the Highlands who was making this great drug thing or something. Anyway,
it sounds familiar.
The cure is this drug, but at the end of the adventure, they find out what that is. And anyway, it's all rather silly. And yeah, we can now move on to Shadow's House, episode 11. I think that was also the penultimate of slimes, right? Oh, 11 of 12. Yeah. So 11 of 12 on that. And then Shadow's House, this is episode 11. So we got a couple more after this.
Got two more, which I'm happy about. This show has been a sleeper, I think. It's been slowly growing on me, ever increasingly. But we pick up with this episode, which we learn, I don't know, like we talked about last week, you know, not that I took a huge leap, but I predicted, okay, now it's Kate's turn to try to figure some stuff out. You know, she's got to help Emilico.
Yeah.
Emilico's been brainwashed by this coffee. And so she does just that, and she starts snooping around Emilico's room she has, a very tiny room.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, while she's in there, she finds her journal that she had kept kind of secret. You know, she was kind of hiding it.
She hadn't told Kate about it.
Yeah, and she had it, like, it wasn't, like, on top of her desk. It was, like, kind of, like, tucked under, so she didn't find it right away. But then she finds it, and, you know, Emilico writes in there, like, oh, these are all the things that I shouldn't be thinking about. I'm going to write them down. And she's like, you know, you'd think that would, just make you think about them more because you're more fresh in your mind. But then I think there's something written in there about the soot sickness.
Yes.
And about how drinking water is
the cure for it.
Is a cure, something to help you alleviate that. And so this leads to a scene where Kate forces Emilico, who is still, of course, subservient, but has lost connection with her herself, like her true self. She's
more subservient even.
Because
of this.
And more, and not only subservient to Kate, but to the Shadow's House
in general. Yeah,
yeah, at large.
And Kate does not physically force her. It's just through this persuasion
she listens to what Kate says,
yeah,
and Kate says drink water, so she drinks a glass of water,
I drink some more and
it's not, I mean, it's not,
you drank so much, now you're throwing up, all right, we'll throw up and then drink some more,
not until you burst into tears will I tell you to stop. But it turns out that was all it took. But yeah, that scene I'm not gonna say it was like, you know, could be in the movie Seven or something. Was kind of like approaching that territory of just a little bit of just being uncomfortable. Like it was an effective scene for me, where it was like, you know, like you totally understand that she's doing this because she is subservient to Kate, and that she has to listen to her, right? Especially with the brainwashing, right?
Yeah.
She can't disobey her, but like as it goes on and on, you know, Emilico starts to, you know, be concerned about it, but she still keeps doing it, and it's a little hard to watch. I mean, it's not the most gruesome thing I've ever seen, but it was nice in this show. Like I like, you know, it's getting increasingly darker, and this helped to elevate that. And then what happens after that?
Yeah, so it breaks the soot spell from the drinking of the coffee thing, and
it works.
And then Kate, now she can trust Emilico again, I guess. And she sort of lays some things out that we didn't really know about.
Yeah.
Or that we didn't know that Kate knew about, I guess.
Yeah. And we didn't really know either.
Really know all of these things, yeah.
They do show a scene where we learn that there are like common villagers outside of the Shadow's House.
Yes.
And yeah, that.
And yeah, so the thing that Kate tells Emilico is that living dolls are actually just humans that have been abducted and brainwashed, basically. And then we see the scene of some of the elder Shadow's House members taking a train, going out of town, and selecting new quote-unquote living dolls.
Yes.
Which are just human children from the village that the villagers give up readily because
it's like an honor.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like a weird thing. And yeah. they're like, they're all semi-brainwashed because of the soot or something. They say something about that too. So,
yeah.
So that's where dolls come from. They're not really like dolls. And you had said early on that, the doll technology is just, whoo, amazing. And yeah.
Yeah.
Turns out, they're not just human-like. They are humans.
But yeah. There's a reason they're so lifelike. Yes. They are life.
Quite, yeah.
And that's great. I love it. Like it seems so simple. I think I considered it, but I hadn't been like, oh, that's what it is. You know, I wasn't convinced of it. I was like, where is this going? But then last week's episode, you know, we learned that the Shadows House members are considered, quote unquote, from Edward, quote unquote, parasitic fairies. Like, oh, that's interesting. And so now in the context of that and what we've learned with this episode, it's like, you know, they, from what you were saying, the common folk being infected with the soot and stuff, it's like they are just infecting this whole community. Like, who knows how big it is? But they are just pure.
One thing I was thinking about when the Elder Shadows members go to the town to select new children to bring to Shadows House, if they were children from that town, because they're hiding their sootiness and they're just showing human faces, right?
Yeah.
If they were children from that town, wouldn't the people of that town whose children they were possibly recognize them? I mean, it's been years, I guess, but...
You'd think so.
But they did say there's multiple towns, so maybe they just make sure that they never send someone to the town that they're from or something. I don't know.
But it seems like, I mean, when we see this scene where they go, like, recruit some children and they line them all up, and they pick them. The parents of the children who are picked are so happy, they're so elated, and it kind of seems like, going along with that, that they're never going to see them again. Yeah. But they're so happy that they're going to have a better life and they're going to, you know, be a part of the you know, aristocracy, as it were.
Yes.
But that's, you know, not really as glorified as they might think it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, and then in the midst of this, Emilico is kidnapped.
Well, Emilico disappears.
She disappears.
We don't know she's kidnapped until later.
That's true. Yeah, I'm just trying to...
So Emilico is in her room and hears a knock on her door and is like, oh, what's this? And then she has disappeared and Kate freaks out and is looking sort of everywhere for her and goes and talks to, who does she go to first? John, I think.
John, yeah.
Yeah, John. And then they involve Lou and Louise.
Yeah. Well, she has this whole scene with John where she's trying to, like, you know, he already likes her, right? So he's more receptive to hearing what she has to say.
Mm.
And she, kind of comedic scene, convinces him that something's afoot. And like, she's like, haven't you noticed like a change in Sean, you know, from all of this? And then there's a funny exchange where like, so like Kate had Emilico, like I wrote down waterboarding.
Yeah, it's not what waterboarding is.
No, I know, but it's like a polite form of it. Like, when you have a slave, I mean, they do everything you say. I mean, it's essentially. But yeah, it's not technical waterboarding. But she does that with the water trick on Emilico. But then John ends up just beating the shit out of Sean, like beating him
like a knockdown dragout fight.
And I wrote out beating him out of submission is really what happens.
Yeah, basically.
And it is a cool moment, like where John like seems like a simple guy, you know, like he's not, there's nothing too complicated about him. Like he's just like, what, like he hadn't noticed it at all, which is like, okay, that's kind of strange. Like there's a clear change. And then once, you know, Kate says something about it, he starts, you know, Sean walks in the room and he starts to notice all these things and he's like, it all starts to add up. And then he's just like, all right, well, I'm going to have to beat you until you change. You know, he's just so simple minded in that way, I guess. But it's really funny and a bit endearing. But yeah, she wins them over. And
yes, because what you want is someone who, when they don't know what to do and they have a problem, is they beat the crap out of you. That's what you should look for in a relationship, ladies or gentlemen or whoever you are.
That was a man's, man-to-man disagreement over brainwashing. Anyway, no, yeah, I agree with you.
Because,
trying to justify.
Because the initial thing is when Kate shows up, John thinks that she's there because he had basically propositioned her earlier and said, you know, I'm really into you. And if you're into me, you know, come meet me in my room. And so when she first shows up, he's like, oh, you decided that you want to marry me.
Sweet.
Yes. And then he proves that his only reaction to things he doesn't like is to get physically violent.
I don't know if it's, I don't know
not
if
a,
it's
not a good way to catch a lady.
I mean, I agree with that, but it is a little attractive from her, from Kate's perspective, that that he listened to her and took in what she said, evaluated Sean in light of that, and came to a conclusion that she was right.
And came to a conclusion that he needed to beat the crap out of him.
Well, yeah, it's that, it's that decision that is a bit extreme, but it worked. So I don't know. It's, what do you say after the fact? It's like, well, you could have just given him a bunch
probably,
of water.
Probably a better way to do it. Yeah, that's what I would say after the fact. Yeah.
But that scene was was.
Like that's the thing you jumped to? I mean, I don't know.
That scene was hard to watch for me, but yeah.
Anyway, yeah, let's move on. So then after that, Lou and what's Patrick's guy's name?
Ricky.
Yeah. All of them show up. Lou, Louise, Patrick, Ricky.
Yeah, they kind of have a meeting of the minds.
Yeah. And Louise actually comes around on the whole thing, which is kind of surprising because she seems to be buying into the family line pretty hard most of the for most of it.
What?
And then she sort of does a 180 all of a sudden.
What's interesting to me is that Kate was trying, I think, not because with John, I think she knew that she could kind of reach him because he liked her and stuff. That,
yeah.
You know, the barriers had kind of been broken down. But I think when it came to Louise and Ricky, she realized that she shouldn't push so hard this whole conspiracy about how the dolls are actual people. And I don't know if she would, it just kind of came about, you know, once they realized that, because in this meeting, they, Louise had seen someone who had was pushing a cart that like seemingly could have had a doll in it.
One of the and, was it a tall, I don't remember what they call them, but
yeah, like tall figure.
One
but
of
then,
one of the maids of some sort, but not one of the doll. I don't remember. They have these different classifications.
Yeah,
like there's the star bearers, and they're, you know, it wasn't a star bearer, but it was somewhere in between. Anyway.
And they were wearing some sort of cloak or something, but underneath the cloak, Louise was perceptive enough to notice the clothing design that could only be Edward. And
yeah.
so she narrowed it down to Edward must have kidnapped Emilico. That's what it seemed like. And so they go off of this, and so that's what gets Louise. The common thread between all of them is they don't like Edward. Based on what just happened with the debut.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not like she convinced John of everything, of the whole conspiracy and like everything that's going on. Because it definitely seems like Kate, like she hid her soot powers in the debut until she had to use them, and she used them to great effect, and they, you know, they just barely made it, right? Just barely passed. But that was all in pursuit of trying to undermine this whole organization, right? Because she already knew. She was trying to get Emilico to show her true colors and become herself, but she didn't know about the coffee. I'm assuming she learned of that late. And so in light of that, she's got John on her side, but everyone else is kind of like, all right, we don't like Edwards. Let's start there. Let's just save Emilico. And like, because I noticed that whole conversation like switched to just like, screw Edward, not, you know, we're being played for fools.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, and yeah, that's pretty much where the episode ends, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's all set up. We got two more episodes left, but it's all set up seemingly to save Emilico and topple this Shadows House. Like, I don't know if they have enough time to do that, but...
Yeah, I don't know. Probably not, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess the only other thing we see is confirmation that it is Edward, and he has kidnapped Emilico, right?
Yes.
Because initially it's, you know, sort of speculation on their part. That he was pushing a cart and it had, you know, this large sack that was about the size of a living doll. And anyway, yeah.
Did they actually show Edward? I mean, I know there was a scene where like, she's like, why are you doing this? Who are you? And I didn't know.
Maybe not.
I can't remember if it was revealed if it was him, but it definitely seemed like it was obviously him. But
yeah, maybe they didn't actually show Edward. I don't know. Well, we'll find out next episode.
We shall.
And until then, thank you for listening. Thank you for being a part of our lives. Thank you for making us a part of your life.
And thank you for being a friend.
Thank you for being a friend. We've been back again.
Goodbye, friends.
Yeah, we're on all the socials if you got anything you want to say to us. Unlike anime, UmlikeAnime. And yeah, I don't know. I say it every time. If this is your first time listening, go back and listen to like an older episode. You'll hear me do the whole spiel like really good. At this point, we're 30 episodes in. I'm tired of saying the same thing over and over.
We got a Patreon. Leave comments on YouTube or Twitter. All right, see you next week or later this week. One of those. Both of those.
Sunday? See you Sunday.
Sunday. And look out for our What We'll Be Watching episode. It'll come out this week as well.
It's going to come out sometime. We're not sure when.
It'll
Do you know when?
Week. It'll come out this week.
All right. Sweet. So keep an eye out for that. Thursday. Thursday would be my ideal day for that to
Thursday
come out.
Thursday would be nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, look out for that on Thursday. And if it's not there, you know who to blame. Yep. Bye.